हरिः ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे जय सो देन सक्री सर दीपिका एंड सो नाउ वी आर अप टू पुत्र मूर्धा बिग्राणम स्मेलिंग द सन्स हेड सो दिस सन सेज This may be performed after the Annaprasanna ceremony when the father returns from a long journey and wishes to bless his child. So, in other words, he hasn't been there for some time. So when he comes back, he'll naturally want to, give blessings on that to the child. But it's after the Annaprasanna ceremony, right? Because after that, then there's more interaction, more things like that. And this is the particular time for it. The father should wash his feet, perform achmana and facing east, hold the child's head or the eldest son's head first if there are more than one son, saying. So it would appear that if there's more than one son, this is something that can be done. So if you're doing this for, so in other words, when you have the first son, then you're doing this as the ceremony. But if when you have the second son and you're doing this for the second son, you can start with the first son, so they also get blessings again. But it would appear it's something that would be done once. But if there's more than one, then when you're doing the second, then you give blessings for both. If there's a third, you give blessings for all three. So the idea is that otherwise it'll look like you leave somebody out. So then you do for all. So he says, Breath of life, from limb to limb you flow, from the heart you conquer. O sun, to you by breathing I give life, live a long life for me. Right, so we saw before is in the previous one in the Anaprasana. That may be why also then this one is done after Anaprasana. Because in Anaprasana, then one of the main yajna part is, oh no, excuse me. Yeah, the main part is when you're feeding the child and you're offering to all the five life heirs. So the life heirs have been respected and that. And so then, because Krishna is the life heirs, as he mentions. And so then those life heirs, having been respected, you've already brought in that part, that purified aspect. Now then he's talking about the breath of life, from limb to limb. So these Pranas are flowing from limb to limb, and that's what makes grow. From the heart you conquer, because they all sit in the heart, and from there you go out. And then more than that is also that's where the living entity is, that's where the Lord is. And so then activities of the living entity in connection with the Lord, those actually then those are the things that actually satisfy the heart and not other things. And by my breathing I give life, so then he The father, then he, by his, how you say, activities and all that, then he, that gives life. He performs the activity that protects the son, that trains the son, that does all the things. And so he's saying, live a long life for me. So then, in the service of the Lord. Then the second, from limb to limb you flow, from the heart you conquer. Your name is the Veda. Eternal knowledge, live 100 autumns, 100 harvests. Right? Because the harvest comes in the autumn, so that's considered, a very prosperous time of the year. Winter then is quiet. Then the spring, you start to, do the preliminary plowing and all that, maybe do the planting. Then those will grow, and then in the fall, then that's when everything is ripe and ready. So then you harvest at that time, so it's a very nice thing. So you even have, Rupa Goswami's mentioning in Nectar Devotion that. When you do the harvest, the new harvest, then anything that's from that, then things should be first offered to the Lord. So even you have, the new grains or whatever the particular thing is, they first should be offered to the Lord. And this doesn't mean that they have to be cooked in oven. It just means they're come and presented before the Lord, right? You have a ceremony where you present all these things for the Lord, that this is the new things that we've grown. You know, this is the new season, and present before the Lord. And then after that, then they can be taken to, you know, the kitchen and, you know, at the appropriate time in the menu, then they're cooked and everything like that. Does that make sense? So offering means you're presenting that this is the new things, just like you may present to the deities the new outfit. Then you're going to put it on at whenever it's supposed to be put on. But the idea is that it's not, once you do that, it's prashad, technically. I mean, at the ceremony, what you put in front of the deities and that can be put there or it can be distributed depending on what you want to do. But it's with his blessings that that is going on. And then sometimes also there's things where they, from what I understand, like in Bengal, they would take, let's say, rice when it's the new rice, because rice will come in Bengal, it'll go 3 times a year. So whenever the new rice is harvested, they'll take that, soak it, grind it, and then make preparations that you make with rice flour. You know, so they might make those special sweets that you make on Makar Sankranti and all that, all the pitas and all those. So they'll do that for the Lord, that's the aspect like that, and offer these fresh items. But the point is you're offering before the Lord, and that to show this there, and then, you know, to whatever is the, you know, be the natural thing or what you can do, then some of those are actually then offered on the Lord's plate and all those after doing that, you know. Okay, and so that's the point of the 100 autumns, 100 harvests, you know, that's because it means that there's prosperity. So he's living a long life, so 100 years, and, you know, there'll be 100 autumns, 100 harvests. So it's not just the autumn comes that you're living, you also have the harvest. Their benefits are there. You're getting the fruits of your work. You've worked to do something, you're getting results. So for Krishna consciousness means you're working and you're getting results. You're pleasing the Lord, pleasing the Vaishnavas. That's the best part. And then your name is the Veda, eternal knowledge, that the life air is of Krishna, is the Veda, eternal knowledge. This is just because the Vedas come from Krishna's breathing. When Krishna breathes, then the Vedas manifest. So that's the eternal knowledge, that light, that prana. That is then what is then imbued in each living entity in whichever body they're in, and then they can perform their activities. So the point is the prana then is being applied. So it's action. But the point is the prana is the Lord's prana, but that is also the Veda, as you mentioned here. Your name is the Veda. So that means all activities, all effort, all expenditure of energy, and that should be in line with the Veda. So if you do that, then naturally, then there'll be 100 harvests. Okay. And then the third one, be like a stone, be like a thunderbolt, be immortal, wealth. O sun, you are my very self. Do not die, live 100 autumns. So then, so this is all being done with he holds the sun's head. He hasn't smelled yet. Okay. So be like a stone, right? Stones are fixed, right? You know, it's just like Raghunath Das Goswami's sadhana is like lines written in a stone. You know, the stone is very fixed. It's solid. That's the whole point. Like in the marriage ceremony, then the stone is brought and put, the girl puts her foot on the stone, and then the husband, the groom is saying, be like a stone fixed, you know, in your vrittas and all that. So being like a stone means you're fixed, you're stable, you're steady, you're, what do you call it? Your regulation is very good, because regulation is the aspect that creates auspiciousness, it creates prosperity, it creates long life. All that comes from regulation. Prabhupada mentions that in Kali Yuga, people are short-lived because one of the reasons is they're not regulated. You know, so if they were regulated, then their life would be much longer. Like you see before, is that okay? You go back earlier, they're not very well educated, so they get sick due to uncleanliness. They don't know these things, how to deal. Then once they figure out how to be more clean and all those things like that, then their life gets, you know, better. But you see is that in their life, they're regulated. So once you remove the uncleanliness, then that regulation is there. The lives, they lived a long time. But now you see in the modern age, because you've gotten rid of anything, regulation is there because of religion, because of actual piety and tradition, you know, and being connected more with nature, getting up in the morning when the sun comes up, going to bed after the, you know, when the sun goes down, these kind of elements. So removing that, then naturally the regulation goes, and then with that goes the life is not as long, you know. Because then that's a problem for society. If society is regulated, then long life is appreciated. Because people are, you know, health is good, things go along, they can do so many things. But when health is not regulated and all that, then they don't do so well when they're old, and they don't live so long, and no one wants them around. So, you know, you solve all these problems by being regulated. So therefore, be like a stone, be regulated. Like that, be like a thunderbolt, right? So it's very powerful; it can't be broken. Like that, be immortal wealth. So wealth then is, you know, what benefits you get from your work. Immortal wealth will be the devotional benefits you get from your work. There's no other work, either in the area of karma jnana, or in the way of you know, material facility or liberation, is immortal. Right, it has that element of immortal, that you go to the heavenly planets, you live for longer than here, so they'll call it Amara, immortal. Or you'll say that you renunciation, you get liberation, so you can say on one level it's immortal compared to what we live. But in the actual sense, immortal only means being established in an eternal relationship with Krishna. So that's immortal wealth. Then you are my very self. So the sun represents the father, like that. You know, Manu mentions that with the sun, the father is born again as the sun, like that. That's why then we see in the girl has lived under the father's care. Then we see that then the father then chooses the groom to take that responsibility, and then with the son, then the father is born as the son, and so now he takes care. So in this way, you can say, as the girl's always being taken care of, in this way, all the way through, there's a natural thing. Yes, Pandavaji. Pandava has something to say. The green square is circling his picture. No? Okay. So do not die, live 100 autumns. So two aspects of that, do not die. One is do not die means, yeah, physically do not die before, you know, one lives the proper full life, you know, like that. And two, you know, so that would also mean don't do any nonsense that would shorten your life, right? You know, yeah. And then do not die also means if you don't die, because that's the whole thing of being a parent, is to save your child from death. You know, that whole cycle of birth, death, old age, and disease. So that means then you come to the transcendental platform. Right? Karmis will interpret that, go to the heavenly planet, so you've gotten out of the cycle of death, or jnanis into the emergence of the Brahman, but we know that that's temporary. You still come back. So therefore, actually, not dying means transferring to the spiritual realm, you know, from devotional service. So we can see is all throughout these things, it's always talking about being a devotee, surrendering to the Lord and everything like that. It's always in reference, but it's in a hidden way so that those who are not devotional won't get too bent out of shape. You know, they'll see it that they're getting the benefits they want in karma and jnana. But in actuality, it's devotional service, the fifth level of consciousness. This is the real thing. This is the real, real goal of all of it. And so we see it's all there. Because I'll take it, you know, with the pranas and all that, and you can get all these different things from the metaphysical and all these kind of aspects. And you can get all the different elements of the universe and all their relationships and all that, like the Tantra does. But the... But in here, it's actually the devotional element. What's beyond that, the source of that metaphysical, that's where it comes. So that all comes from the Lord. He should smell the child's head, saying, Oh, son, making a sound like the breathing of the cows, I smell your head. Right? You know, because the cows, when they smell nicely, you make a, you know, quite a good sound. You can tell that it's happened. We should then apologize for any faults in the ceremony by performing achudravachanam. The father has, you know, that means, you know, angahinam, kriyahinam, that one. The father has not gone on a long journey. The ceremony can be performed when the child can recognize the father. Otherwise, it is performed after the upanayanam ceremony. Thus ends the putra, murdha, bigranam. Right? So after the, So in any case, this is happening after anaprasana, we mentioned, because you've already then worshiped the life heirs like that. So that aspect's in place. So because this is about the further aspect of the life heirs, therefore then, it's done after the anaprasana. So then it can be done. If he gone on a long journey, then he can do that. If not, then it can be done when the child can recognize the father, because it may be he's just seeing the mother and hasn't recognized, you know, it's not focusing exactly, okay, this is father, this is mother, and things like that. And, you know, because you might have that the father's not around as much, he's out, you know, doing his work and comes back now and again, so the son hasn't quite heard that, you know. Otherwise, then if it hasn't been after the upanayanam ceremony, it can be done, you know, so when he becomes, you know, depending on your calculation, 4 or 5. So in any case, it can be done at any of these points.
Tomorrow?
Huh, yes.
So basically, this ceremony is all about establishing a solid relationship between father and son.
Yeah, that and the father's blessing that he should live a progressive, dynamic, Krishna conscious life during that long life. Otherwise, just long life on its own, then Bhagavatam says that's like the bellows breathing, you know, it's like, you know, big deal. Yeah, but it's very nice. It's about establishing the relationship. That's, otherwise, if it doesn't mean anything, there's the father, then it won't have quite the significance. It won't have, the thumb scar won't be as deep. But when there's interaction, then the blessings of the father is much stronger. If it's just a ceremony, he just does it. But if the son's actually interacting, it'll be even more strong, you know, and also for the son, then, you know, something's been done.
Also, Maharaj, this is just, that's how you begin, but it's always like that. It keeps continuing every time the father sees his...
Yes.
The affection of father to son flows in this way.
Yes, yes.
By
he doesn't say all the mantras and all that, so it doesn't have the ritual, but he's always going to pick them up. Like you even see is that in the Bhagavatam, it's talking about, you know, these are the cowherd boys, and they come back and their parents are picking them up, smelling their head, things like that. It's just a natural thing, because you pick them up, they're there, then the head's right there, then you smell the head. It's just a natural thing. Yes, exactly what you're saying. So it would be, you could say this formalizes this process that would go on, you know, until he's, you know, how you say, until the son's taller than the father, hard to smell his head, but, you know, so. But it's lifelong, yes. Yeah, as Manu mentions, the relationship with mother, father, and teacher, it's lifelong. Like that. Yeah. So next, Chudakarna, haircutting ceremony. So this samskar should be performed during the male child's first year, between the child's first and second year, the best option. Third year, between second, third year, second option, or fifth year, third option. So in other words, the best is after that he's crossed the first year, and before the second, you know, whenever there's a good time and whenever there's a, you know, a proper time and everyone's around and, you know, it can be done. That if not, then the third year, if not the fifth year. Footnote. Ashwalaya in Agriya Sutra says, life is prolonged by cutting the hair. Without cutting it, life is shortened, right? So that's the thing is people, oh, why do we have to do this? We just chant Hare Krishna. Yeah, go ahead, shorten your kid's life. We're just chanting Hare Krishna, right? He'll go back to Godhead sooner, right? Parents are going to agree with that? Probably not. So that's what it does. Because the hair that you're born with is considered impure. So at some point it needs to be removed, right? Therefore, the hair-cutting ceremony should be performed by all means. Shushruta said, so Ashwalayana, okay, then Shushruta says, this is the Ayurveda, having shaving the head and cutting the nails removes impurities and gives delight, lightness, prosperity, courage, and happiness. So that's the whole point. You're cutting, one is that's just general cutting the hair. So let alone when it's done at this time, then, you know, it lengthens life. But even as a regular thing, people, it gives the lightness, prosperity, courage, and happiness, you know, when you've cut your hair and all, you know, if somebody has some special program, they may go out and get a haircut, you know, do their nails and, you know, wax their beard or whatever it is. I mean, their mustache, whatever they're doing. Then they have that greater, you know, courage, happiness, confidence, all these different things. So it's all part of the process. Charaka, which is the main, cutting the hair, beard, and nails gives strength, vigor, life, purity, and beauty. You know, so this whole thing where you don't, that's the whole thing, is that it has to be maintained. Whatever it is, it's being regularly cut, then it maintains all these things. That's why people think it does something nice, right? Okay. Then after his early morning bath, the father worships Vishnu and the Acharyas by doing Sattvika Vritti Shraddha. Then he should perform all the Kushandika rites up to the end of Virupaksha, establishing the fire, Satya. After completing Virupaksha Japa, he should place 21 pinjalis divided into three groups of seven on the south side of the fire. South, that means he's facing east, west, north, south, to the right. Okay. The three groups of pinjali should be connected to one another by placing a few blades of kusa grass on top of them with the tips intact. So you have the pinjalis are putting there. So you have one, two, three. Then you take, you know, longer ones and then put them on top. So they're all facing east, right? It means, you know, forward from the kunda. So you put the three and then you put one long, you know, on top, or, you know, a bunch of them on top. You know, that's full length, and so then they'll cover them and connect them together. The father should also place there a bell metal vessel with warm water and a copper razor or mirror, right? Because then because if you're regularly doing these ceremonies, then you make, as you have the regular razor, whoever makes those, you have them make one out of copper. So the blacksmith or whatever they're making, then they make a copper razor. And so it's not sharpened. It's just the station of the razor. Everything's like the razor, but it's not sharp. It'll cut hair, right? Or at least, you know, it's not as sharp as the other, right? The barber who will shave the boy should also be standing on the south side of the fire holding a regular razor, right? So he has the regular. So the copper one is because copper is considered has that pure element and all that. It's also fire. It does all these different things because all these other aspects come from there, right? Means strength is fire, vigor is fire, life is fire, purity, you know, comes from fire, beauty comes from, so they all come from it. So it all naturally, copper naturally then represents all those things nicely. On the north side of the fire, that'll be the opposite in the left. He should place bull dung and a pot of khichdi made of sesame, rice, and urd all cooked together, right? So we had like that before. Is that during one of the ceremonies that that was there, and then the wife, you know, was given that pot to eat like that? So now this must be, this should probably be your, you know, highest quality havishana, you know, like that. Other than rice cooked in milk, but I'm just saying it's the, because you have the urd dal instead of the mung dal, and you have the sesame, so then they're all high grade things, and the sesame is also connected with the children. So we saw before, as the sesame was there, you know, it was about the birth of the child, you know, before preliminaries to birth, and then this is also then about the child. The mother with the cleanly dressed child in her lap should sit on kusa grass on the west of the fire, on the left side of the husband facing east. So then he's sitting where he, wherever he's sitting, she'll sit to his left. Like you see in some ceremonies, they sit to the right, some to the left, or she sits on the right. Then after handing the child goes around to the left like that. The father should offer ghee soaked wood in the fire silently, then perform Vyasta Samasta Mahavyarati Homa, Burbu Vaswa. Then following this, the husband should rise and facing east, stand behind his wife, looking towards the barber. He should meditate on Vishnu, saying, "May the Lord come here and cut the hair of this child with this blade made potent by mantra." Yeah. And so, yeah, so the blade is, yeah, the potency is the mantra, like you see in the weapons and all that. The weapon is there. It works, but then it's made more potent by the mantra, right? Like that. So it's by the Lord's grace, because we see cutting the hair gives long life and beauty and confidence and strength. So all those different things, that then is the Lord. He's the one that gives all those things. It's his potency, because there is the element of the cutting of the hair for the boys, right? So therefore then it's being done. You know, here also then for the girls, it's done also in the earlier stage, because they also cut their hair, you know, shave their head. One is the purification, but also then it creates the thicker hair and everything. So much of the time, the girls for the first few years, you know, even up to five, then you see they're shaving their head regularly, like when it comes to summer. Now they're doing it with the ceremony, but then later they do it like before summer when it gets really hot. So then, you know, they have the shaved head and then the hair grows back, you know, nicer like that. And this way, then when they do let it grow, then it is very much stronger, the hair. But it's all connected, same with the beauty, right? Looking at the warm water, he should say, "May Vishnu come here and cut the hair of the child using this warm water," right? Because then water is also the element where he said rasa and all that. It's purifying, washes away all the different things. Warm also then has the effects that it's able to do that cleansing or whatever processes even more, you get a better purifying effect with the warm water when you're doing something. Now, Achman is cool water. That's what it's mentioned. But when you're doing something and cleansing something or working with something with water, then the warm water works better, like washing dishes or scrubbing something or washing clothes like this. He should take the warm water in his right hand and apply it above the right ear of the child, saying, right, so the right side, "May these waters moisten his hair so that he may live long," right? So the moistening the hair so it cuts not, because it said by cutting the hair, then the life is long. So the point here is then by moistening it, it will cut nicely, right? So and also we have the aspect, because we mentioned the water is moistening and all that, so the water's purity will give long life. And also proper relations with people and all that, you know, that will give long life also. We find that people, when they don't have proper relations and all that, then there's more anxiety, there's more difficulty, right? He should, looking at the copper razor, he should say, "You are the teeth of Vishnu. May Vishnu himself cut the hair of this child." Right, so the potency is there because of Vishnu. So that knives or razors cut, anything cuts is because of the potency of Vishnu. Right, he should place a bundle of kusa grass, root side up, over the right ear of the child, saying, right. So then you have that bundle means the pinjali. So when you put it on the ear, it'll always be at an angle, right? You don't put it level like this. It's always going to be at an angle. And so then that being at the angle, the roots will be up and the tips will be down. Saying, "May Achyuta, Ananta, and Narayana give this child long life. Oh, herbs, protect this child." Right? So Achyuta is, you know, means infallible. Ananta is unlimited. Narayana is the protector of Nara, of humans. You know, he's the one who takes care. So by the grace of the Lord, this will go on. And we see by herbs, protect the child. So always in the healthy, see in the Ayurveda, everything, all these different herbs that we use, you know, then, you know, the different spices and all that, then they protect the health and all that. I remember seeing, we had once, and I mean, it may still be there, but a set of books in the library. They were by some Bengali author. I'm not sure if the ones we had were translated. I think they were. But he had written, I guess he really knew Ayurveda and that very well. And so he wrote on all the different spices that we'd use in your normal Indian kitchen. And so what the effect of each one of them was. But if he's talking, let's say, about, let's say, cumin seeds, it would be two pages of what benefits you get from it. Each one had two pages of what benefits you get. You know, so these things aren't necessarily well known these days. They think, oh, the Indian cooking's not, the other things are better, using, you know, some olive oil or this or that, that's more healthy. And now that when it's not, you don't even know what these things do. And it was going through each and every spice, you know, that is used. And in the traditional kitchen, a lot of spices are used.
Am I right?
Yes.
On this, the only worthy thing about studying in the college for me was one of the professors. In one of the subjects, he explained some of the benefits of this, each of the spices.
Oh,
mostly
nice.
On the medical therapeutic benefits.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, and those will be there because, you know, they'll be, you know, they'll keep you from holding water. They'll get rid of gas. They'll do acid. They'll do this. They work on these organs, that organ, so many different things. They balance things. I mean, like literally two pages. And we're not necessarily talking bullet points here, you know, or short sentences. We're talking it's being done and you know, quite legal. I remember seeing that. It was very, very nice. So, yes. Go ahead.
Also, I remember him saying almost most of them had anti-cancer properties.
Yes.
So
yes.
These days, this cancer, that is mainly because you don't use any of this.
No. I mean, even in Western cooking, cumin was very, very common. Cumin, bay leaves, so many different things, you know, turmeric. They'd use a lot of these things. But nowadays, you know, people don't know how to cook. These things aren't used so much anymore. Otherwise, before, it was always, you know, using all these different spices. That was the whole idea of, you know, going to Europe. I mean, from Europe to India was to pick up these spices. Because that's where they grew. That's where you could get them all and all that nicely. So they would go there, you know, and other things, fine cloth and all these things. But it was interesting. I saw someone was making a point on why did Columbus, you know, have the idea to try to go to India by going west instead of east? Because always they go on the Silk Road. Right. You know, the Silk Road, you know, you go over to China and, you know, on the way you can stop at, you know, or you stop in India, you know, so like that, then you go and you pick up all these finer things. But then when the Ottomans came in and you know, their empire came up, they blocked that passage. So I think it was you couldn't go there and get it yourself. I guess maybe they don't. You had to buy it from them or something, or they just didn't allow anybody. They just used it themselves. Who knows, whatever. But the point is that, so therefore they had to find a way to get to India, you know, other than going all the way around the Cape of Africa, you know, that, because that was quite dangerous, that down there, the waters there are quite rough. So many times you'd lose ships there. So you'd want some other way. And so then they thought, well, if you could go around and go that side, you know, because Copernicus had already pointed out about the roundness before. So then they just didn't know the size. So they just figured that, you know, you had this one single landmass. And so we were on the western side and you could go around the ocean and come to the eastern side. They didn't know that the Americas were in the middle. And of course, that's also then why it says don't cross the oceans, because in the Vedas, because when you cross the oceans, you get to the Americas. We'll just leave that for a moment to soak in, right? So, yeah. So then the so these herbs are what they were after, you know. So, like you said, is that previously they'd be using these things, and all these things were very, very nice, especially at special occasions and that, or all the teas, before, teas were not, I mean, it's in India, chai was not what's the modern, you know, black tea that you get from China, you know, the green, you know, because even the green tea is more, you know, medicinal. But this would be a combination of, you know, various spices, you know, ginger and your garam masala, you know, so cardamom, cardamom, cinnamon, you know, these different things, bay leaves. All these would be used to make a tea that you would drink. So depending upon what the season was or what, you know, anything in your health, then you'd drink different teas. So they were always very much part of the process. You know, and then at some point when, you know, everybody would be using these, the drink became replaced with, you know, your black tea and with coffee, you know. And so then you lose out on these herbs. Okay, holding the kusa grass with his left hand, he should place the copper razor over the right ear of the child, saying, "May Sankarsana cut the hair of this child without harming him." Right, because Sankarsana, he's the super soul for, you know, in any realm, and so he's the one that maintains and protects everything. You know, then moving the copper blade without cutting the hair, he should say, "For continued life, long life, for strength, for beauty, I shave you with this harmless blade by which the Lord, the Supreme Lord, cuts hair." Right? Because it's the potency. It's that the potency that is being imbued there, that's the potency that cuts. It may manifest through a sharp razor, but the point is that what cuts hair and that gives a long life, continued life, long life, strength, beauty, that's all coming from the Lord. Silently, you should move the copper blade two more times, right? So therefore, we can see from here the copper blade is only ceremonial, so it's not sharp. Using the regular blade, hair should be shaved just above the right ear, and placed on the bull dung held by a friend of the boy, right? So then one of the boy's friends, he brings it over, he holds it. And then they, or someone who's friendly with him, because if he's 1 year old, it doesn't have to be another 1 year old. It can be someone else who is, you know, friendly and likes the boy and has a good will towards the boy. Because we saw last one is about relation with the father. So here then he's continuing that, and now you're adding in friends, right? You know, like we even see up to the marriage ceremony, then you have friends are there, you know, they have the pot and they have the spoon, you know, like that. You know, so, yeah. So then that bulldog is there. So then that's put on the bulldog, because bulldog's not considered, it doesn't have that purifying element like the cow dung. That's why then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur points out that Sarer, what is it? Sarer Gober has no purpose. I mean, it's used here in the ceremony. You know, and it'll fertilize the field, but it doesn't have the purifying effect. So therefore, you know, from the modern, when they refer to bull dung, you know, when they say something's nonsense or useless, it's coming from that principle, that point. So people don't know that it actually is coming from the tradition like that. Okay. The previous seven mantras, starting with Om Ayam Agat Sarveshwara, should be repeated while shaving the area just below the sika. Agat Sankarsana. Okay. Ayam Agat Sarveshwara. So then he goes to the other parts of the head and does the same thing. May the Lord come here, cut the hair. Then looking at the water, he should say, looking at the, then applying the water, then the copper razor, then the bundle of kusa grass, and then all these different things. Then he does that over the left ear, and then they placed on the should be just below the sika, and again while shaving the hair below. So it's done on the right side above the ear, just below the sika, and then on the left side of the ear. So these mantras that we mentioned, and using the razor and all that, and then the barber actually cutting. So the barber will do the cutting like that. Then that is the, what do you call it? That's done three times. Holding the child's head, the father should say, "May there be three lifespans for Jamadagni, for Kasyapa, for Agastya, for the devatas and for the child. Right? So it means that the three lifetimes to be long life for all these great personalities. These are all the, you know, the seven rishis and like that. And so they and the devatas, they, you know, in other words, it's not just the child should live. It means, you know, all these things, because they take care of everything. And so then everything will be very nice. And then the child will grow, you know, will grow and prosper in this nice environment. Because it's not just, it's just the child, but it's just also the whole environment. The father should take the child to the north side of the fire. The barber should be garlanded. The child should face the east or north, and the barber should now shave his head, leaving a sika. Footnote 2. Lago Harita says the sika and yajyopavita are compulsory signs of a Brahman. A man without them does not get the full merit of religious ceremonies. Right? So if you don't have the Brahman thread and the sika, when you perform the any religious ceremony, that you don't get that full benefit, you know. So that's the idea, you see, is the Brahmins. It doesn't matter if they're Vaishnava or not. Like that, they, you know, they all have sika and the Brahman thread. So that's the standard. So if you have these two, then that's considered proper, right? You know, so this new thing where, you know, everyone shaves their head and no sika and, you know, the cool dude and all that kind of jazz. No. You can do it, but it's about why are you doing it? It's probably not because, oh, it doesn't work or this or that, because they got wilder hairstyles than sikhas these days. It's probably a sign of it's not so important to him. So then you get that little bit of less. Shushruta says, inside the head, near the top of the joint of a shira, artery, and sandhi, brahmarandra, any injury to this part causes certain sudden death. Therefore, it's necessary to keep it covered by the shika. So it's protected. Somehow or another, you say, well, I don't understand. It really doesn't matter. Someone says that they have a different opinion. It doesn't matter. This is how Krishna's arranged it. And so this is the way it works. So that's why then, you know, that aspect is there. The hair should be placed on the bull dung, and that should be placed on in a forest or amongst bamboo stalks. Right, so it should be out of the way where it's not going to create any contamination for anybody else. Right, because also in the bamboo, I think all kinds of things can live in there, so then it's not a place where you generally hang out. You go sit under a tree, you don't generally sit under a bunch of bamboo. Sit under a proper tree. Okay, so then the Acharya says, Karnaveda, piercing the ears, may be performed at this time. See Appendix 3. So then if they're doing the ear piercing, then it can be done at this time. It can also be done another time. If they're not doing it, then you don't worry about it. So Appendix 3, Appendix 2, Appendix 4, Appendix 3. Okay, additional samskaras. Then Karnaveda, pierced in the ears. According to Shushruta, Shushruta says, the ears of a child should be pierced for protection from diseases and for decoration. Other Ayurvedic texts describe how when the nerves in the ear are pierced at this time in the child's life, lustus is decreased in later years. Right? So you see is then for the boys, they have the, you know, one in each ear, that piercing, and that's all they have. Well, the girls, because then generally desire is greater, then they, you know, they start off with this there, but as they grow up, then they get the one that's just above at the junction between the, you know, around the ear, and then one up higher like that. So that's three, and then the one in the nose. So that's seven. So then they have all those. Okay. It should be performed during the waxing phase of the moon on an auspicious day before noon, right? So just before noon, then it can be done. And also then, you know, all the different things can be done. You can take a bath, all these things like that. Child be held on the lap of the mother using a gold, silver, or iron needle, right? It says here, Vira Mitrodaya Samskara Prakasha says, a gold needle gives elegance, but one can use silver or even iron needles according to his means. Other texts say that Brahmanas and a Vaishya should use silver needles, Kshatriya gold, and a Shudra iron. Okay. Brahman, because it has to be gold, he may not, but silver he may be able to get. Vaishya is going to use gold because he's so fabulous and rich and the best, so therefore he gets silver, keep his, false ego down, because he may be rich and powerful, but Kshatriyas are more. Kshatriyas use the gold, they're the big guys on the social scene. And then Shudras use iron because that's what's there, and same time, if they get money, they'll want to waste it like that, and all the gold chains, gold teeth, and the fancy cars and the girls and all the diamond outfits, but they should stick to the iron because that's the ritual. Okay. Using a gold, silver, iron needle, the surgeon should first take the right ear of a boy or left ear of a girl and pierce the ears with a single stroke, right? So you have to know the spot, and it's one shot, and not the one shot. And nowadays they have those guns, so in that way then everybody gets the ears pierced with, technically iron, but I think they use the whatever it is you're putting in there. So you can leave the earring, I think, is what does the piercing. So then you could use the silver or gold or iron, whatever it is you're using. And then, you got the spot, mark it, duke, and no problem.
All right.
Yes.
In South, generally, for this ceremony, maternal uncle is involved.
Ah, yes. It just says the surgeon. It just means whoever is doing it. Because it's making a hole is a surgery. So then who's doing it is the surgeon. I mean, technically, in the regular kind of general Vedic system, barbers are surgeons. Because if you have a boil or some other kind of thing like that, that requires cutting or anything, then the barber does it because they're so expert with the blades. And so they do it. So it's not that, and then, because it's just considered a more ordinary thing. And then you can, like Shushruta gets into, surgery that's done on a more refined or more serious level than just the external, but how to go into the inside of the body and do surgery there. They'll use solid gold material and stuff like that. So if it's the maternal uncle is the one that's there, or at least he should be standing there if he's no good with the, the piercing gun, someone who does know how to do it could do it, but they should be there and, be somehow or another involved. So, like that. It doesn't mention it specifically here, but then I would say according to your particular tradition and your locale, whatever is to be done there, then it's done. Otherwise, then just whoever is good at it. Is that okay?
Yes, Maharaj.
Yeah, okay. So then those two can go together. So they've shaved the head, they've got the new earrings, like that. And much of the time you'd see they'd wear those through Upanayanam and everything like that. And then they wear them later in life. They may not. Generally, the Brahmins, if they're doing puja and all that, would. If they're not, then they may not. But they could, but nowadays people are, into these things, so then they wear. But as you see here, they're talking about which ears first. So in other words, both ears are pierced. This idea of just one ear, that's not used by us so much. Balaram has one big earring, but it doesn't mean that he doesn't have one in the other, but he's wearing one big earring on one side. Okay. Then the father should perform Vyasta Samasta Mahavyarati Homa, Rupa Vaswa, then throw ghee soaked wood of one Pradesh length into the fire silently. She perform all the rites of Aditya Karma, beginning with Satyayana Homa up to the end of Amadevi Ganam. Then she give dakshin to the initiated Brahmins and Vaishnavas. Initiated Vaishnavas and Brahmanas. She feed all the Vaishnavas guests and give the khichdi and grains around the fire to the barber. So whatever is around the fire for decoration and all that should be given to the barber. So he'll also get, prasad and this and that. But the point is this, that pot's for the barber. So in the Vedic, also, Manu mentions that the barber, as we said before, in marriage ceremony, the barber comes and he does the thing with the cow. He'll bring the cow in, stand there with the cow, and he says, take the cow away, then he'll untie a cow and take it out. Because the barber is also considered one of the more intimate persons. So Manu mentions that, you know, normally a Brahmin doesn't eat in a shudra's house, but he can eat in the house of his own personal barber and his, and the person who plows his fields, right? He has a person who always does, lives with them. They plow the fields, that person, then they do. Because this naturally, you want to keep a close relation with them. They don't cut your throat. They don't steal your land, right? And besides, because they do that, the nature of people who do that, they're very emotional. I remember in Mayapur, we had a barber that we would always use, even when it got to the point where there were other barbers where people, he got older and others thought others were better or cooler or this or that. We'd always use him in the Gurukul like that. And you'd see is that his relationship with everybody was very much there. It was very emotional. And so then also in Diwali, we'd give him, you know, a dakshin, just even if we're not shaving, we'd just give him one like that. And you know, he'd even have, you know, then, you know, his son would come, and then his son would become the barber when he got too old, and his son would come and do, you know, so it's you have much more of a tie with the barber. So even if you're following, you know, in the West, you know, you have your favorite barber, you're like going to, it's natural. So it's not just to get that anywhere. Like that, you know, and then we also see understanding these kind of things and the, you know, the, what do you call it? You know, when the mafioso, when they would come into the barber shop and there's the guy getting his shave that they want to, you know, deal with, they would ask the barber to step out of the way, right? You know, because they, you know, they don't tell the barber to kill him because they have a relationship. It's understood, you know. Otherwise, you break that down and who knows what will happen. So the barber doesn't get involved. You know, they'll take care of it themselves. So then, we're good. Yeah, seems Pandavaji is smiling. Okay. Rupanuga.
Hare Krishna.
Oh, Hare Krishna. Seemed that after I mentioned that, then you seem to be smiling there, but no, okay,
yeah.
And Vidyapeet, you were wanting to say something?
No, Maharaj, nothing.
Okay. So now we go next is Upanayanam. You know, then that. So we only have two left: Upanayanam and Samavartana. So Upanayanam, we'll just start this, we won't get all the way through. Then the Upanayanam ceremony should be conducted for a Brahmin, counting 8 years from conception or 8 years for the birth of a son on an auspicious day. If that is not possible, ceremony should take place latest before the 16th year from the birth of the child has passed. According to the original rules, there is more delay. The child is not entitled to undergo the ceremony and receive the sacred thread. In a further thing here, because I think this may have been simplified, I don't know if you have the older one, is that it's generally taken with the Brahmin 4 years from conception. Generally, they take it from conception all these years. But if you're not following that, you can also follow it from the Jati Karma when they're born. But otherwise, when they're conceived, that's considered the actual birth. You know, so in the Vedic, that's why the whole thing of abortion and all that's bogus, because no, they're already there, they're alive. But then there's significance when they're born, right? So you could take it from that. So those, in other words, it would mention that for Brahmins, because they generally are keeping all the timings and all that in line. They're not just, you know, they follow Garbhadhan. So they know the time that the child was conceived. Therefore, then they can count that as how old the child is. While others may or may not be following it, so they may or may not know. And so then, you know, they'll just go by the birth of the child. So here, so for, it mentions here eight years. And we've only mentioned about the Brahmins here, because the Kshatriyas then would be, so if you're serious about spiritual life, it'll be, you know, four and eight, four for the Brahmin. And if just about getting educated, it'll be eight. For the Kshatriya, if they're serious, then, you know, it'll be five, you know, or six means you can, means if you say four, it can also be five, depending upon, it's 5 years from conception or 5 years from birth. So when the Brahmin's five, when the Kshatriya is six and the Vaishya is eight, then they should do the Upanayanam ceremony if you're interested in spiritual development. If you're only interested in the education, then when the Brahmin is eight, the Kshatriya 11 and the Vaishya 12, then they will get their, they'll at least study their Veda and get that done. They won't have, they may have completed certain amounts of their study, but they won't have completed actually the Vrata of Ashram training. So that's why then the earlier time is recommended. And then, but it says here, but at least by 16, if they haven't done Upanayana by then they're not qualified to get. All right. And so then all that is given there. So you see that there's this difference made. So, but because for the devotees, then the emphasis is on devotees then have that element of being a Brahmana by knowing Krishna, then you know Brahman, so the Supreme Brahman. So then those considerations that will be there for the Brahmanas are generally chosen to use for the Vaishnava community. But if one is from a community that, you know, especially means if one has a community that is there and that's you know, alive and well in the family, then one can consider those. But if one is looking at it from not so much considering the family thing, you were devotees and all that, then you would use the Brahminical. Does that make sense? You know, so that kind of element is there. And so, therefore, then it mentioned here about the 8 years, because then five, most kids nowadays aren't that qualified at five. And so, therefore, eight will work, you know, from birth. But I remember before talking to some Brahmins, you know, practicing Brahmins from South. They were devotees. They were in Mayapur. And I asked him about what mantras, you know, what did the kids learn? What were the mantras they studied? You know, so this would have been 83. And so then they mentioned, well, the first thing generally they would learn, they would start memorizing Amar Kosh at three. And so I think it has about 1,200 verses. You know, so it's bigger. It's basically one and a half times the size of the Bhagavad Gita. And with that, then it's a dictionary. So it you have 10,000 word vocabulary, right? And there is a form of it called the Amar Sar, which is only 600 verses, which has taken the more essential, you know, essential verses and all that. So they would learn that there, so that they already learned that before. They'd already learned how to write, you know, how to read, all that they've learned, you know, before that. You know, they could even start learning Gita shlokas or stuff like that. But so those kids, then when they hit five, they could get the Upanayanam ceremony and learn Vedas and you know, do their Achman and behave properly and sit down and sit for yajnas and all that. Because it was there in the family, you know, their father, you know, they're the ones that they could tell you seven generations of their family, and they'd all be practicing Brahmins, right? So they all know the Veda, they all study and everything like that. But you find that if that's not the case, then, you know, they've gotten more of a mixed kind of, milieu of experiences, then, you know, eight works fairly well if they're serious. Otherwise, then you have to use, if they're not so serious, you see those who are more brahminical, they would vote then, not the Kshatriyas at 11, Vaishyas at 12, you know, forgetting that. If they've come, I'm talking about those who have come early at five. They come later, then naturally they'd be later. But latest is by, so if it doesn't happen at 16, then they have to wait for when they get second initiation from being a devotee. As an adult. So if they haven't gotten by, so 16 is the cutoff for the kids, and that means they're getting Upanayanam, they're going to be using it, you know, they're going to be chanting the mantras, doing the yajnas, doing the puja. This is not just, you know, fathers, yeah, you know, we're cool, we want our kids to have this and all that, we're cool dudes. that kind of thing. It does go on. It can be done if the father can do. But the point is the father also has to know is whatever goes wrong, that the karma goes to the father. He can't say it's otherwise. So as it is, whatever is going to the father, he does upanayanam, even more comes. So, yeah, you know, it's one has to be mature in dealing with these things. So that's why you'll see here is that the thing for the Brahmin, and then from Mana, we'll always take what the Brahmin wears, what kind of thread they wear, what kind of cloth they wear, what kind of, you know, staff they use and those things like that. Because if you get down to, okay, well, you have this nature, you're from this background, I found parents get grumpy, you know, so just use the the Brahmin, which is very nice. It's authorized by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. This is our standard. We do this, and so then it works very well. Because it's the ashram. What they grow up and do as varna and make their money, then that comes up to there. But ashram anyway is brahminical. And so within that, if you follow all the brahminical elements, you know, as a devotee, it's proper. Okay, so we'll end here. Any other comments or?
Maharaj?
Yes.
This 8 years, here it is mentioned in the old one, according to some authorities, the Brahmin child should take the threads between ages 5 to 16, Kshatriya between 6 to 22, and Vaishya between 8 to 24.
Yeah, so you get the lowest and the highest. So Manu's, what I was mentioning is Manu. He mentions that this is, the earlier one is always what you'd use if you're serious about spiritual life. And if you're not, you're just worried about, you know, pious education, then you could use, you know, towards the upper one. But the point is then devotees have to say, we're Vaishyas, we're Shudras. I mean, we're Vaishyas, we're Kshatriyas. Who's doing that? Right? And so then they have to also then, when it comes to these things, since you're doing it on that, when we're dealing with the puja and you're the Vaishya Kshatriya, don't be giving so much input. You can talk about, okay, we don't have the money for doing that, or we have the money, or we don't have the ability to organize that, or we do have the ability, but don't talk about what rituals should be done. Leave that to those who took the Upanayanam as a Brahmin, because they identified in that way. So you can't have your cake and eat it that, oh, I can get Upanayanam until I'm 23, but at the same time as you don't call me a Vaishya because we're all devotees and we just chant Hare Krishna and we don't need to do this and that, but it's cool getting the Upanayanam and the earrings, so I'll do that part. It means it has to be consistent. So that may be why it was taken down to this. That this is just a practical thing, but what you're reading there, that's actually what is said there. And Manu mentions then, you know, giving further on that, but he mentions that if by 16 the Brahmin doesn't take, he can't take. That also means for the others. But the point is, since we're identifying as devotees and they're getting, then that has to come there. Because for most, until they get second initiation, how are they? How would they be Vaishyas? They're born Shudras. So if you've done all the different ceremonies and samskars like that, including Garbhadan, then say you're a Vaishya, and then you could get, okay, that's fine. But the point is if you didn't, then you can only get the Upanayanam by having gone through Vaishnav Diksha. So even if they want to say that, so unless they're from practicing, you know, their Marwaris or their, you know, what do you call those, Chedis or whatever, then okay. And they're practicing, they do that, they give in charity, they respect the Brahmins, they're doing their regular pujas, all that, they wear their thread, they chant. Okay, then we can say. But if they're not doing that, then it's a joke. So then just stick to, because it's brahminical, then you're getting. And so if you're below 16 and you show actual nature of a dvija, especially Brahman, then getting has some meaning if you have the lifestyle like we were showing in the Gurukul. But if any other schools that don't do that do, then what's the point? They reduce the puja, reduce all these things, and don't take part in all these festivals. Why give them Upanayanam? This is not for prestige. This is so that they can actually do stuff. You know, and above 16, they're adult, and so then only as getting second initiation, then they qualify, because when you take diksha, the body is it's like redone. So then that's why, according to Pancharatra, anyone, even a Shudra, can get Pancharatra diksha, because then they're reborn. So then, because they're reborn now in that new Pancharatric body, now they can receive Upanayanam. Does that make sense? So that I know of the Gaudiya Math will do the full ceremony, the Supanayam, but they'll do it after they get second initiation. Or they'll do this and that, but the point is, it's only because of that they're getting it. So they don't do it. You know, if the family did it at home and all that, they have that tradition, then it's fine. But it doesn't mean that, it means, and they come and they have the Upanayanam, they have to chant it three times a day, the proper times, like that. But it doesn't mean that they're qualified to do the yajnas and go on the altar unless they show the nature. They'll have to wait until that nature develops. So, in other words, because you're dealing with Upanayanam, that's dealing with the secondary nature. It's the religious. This is not dealing with the soul. Diksha is dealing with the soul. Upanayanam is dealing with the gross and subtle body you have. So if it's not manifesting qualities of a dwija, it doesn't apply for you. For the other samskars, everybody gets. But this, no, you have to actually manifest them. They have to be there before you get it. There has to be potential. You know, it has to be a potato before you can make it into French fries. You know? Is that okay?
It's not.
Okay, so I'll end here. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.